This episode of the Vision Board Podcast is brought to you by Onnit. Why Onnit, you ask? Well, here's a word from Onnit's founder and CEO, Aubrey Marcus.
You know, Onnit is the company that has the tools to improve your performance. And in whatever area that you're looking for, we have something to do it. You know, it's like going to it's the Home Depot of house repair, but instead of house repair, it's body and mind repair. You know, and it's body and mind performance enhancement. It's going to that body shop and figuring out what tools that you can apply to help make your life better.
At the Vision Board Podcast, we only promote supplements that we use ourselves, and we only use the best. To give you insights, here's Johnny.
Yeah, guys, my two favorite that I take, one, Alpha Brain. Alpha Brain really helps improve mental focus and memory, and the second one I really swear by is Shroom Tech. Shroom Tech is designed to help your body with energy and cardiovascular endurance. What's your favorite, Tristan?
Johnny, the two that I love is the Warrior Buffalo Bars. I find these delicious snacks, and they're also perfect for when I'm on the road and also on the run. Also, I love the Dolce Whey. They're grass-fed whey protein isolate, perfect for my smoothies and also my post-workout shakes. Now, guys, check out the range at www.onnit.com, and please use code word VISIONBOARD for 10% off at checkout. Now, guys, enjoy the show.
Ladies and gentlemen, today is the first day of the rest of your life. And now, listen in as Tristan and Johnny bring it all to the table on the Vision Board Podcast.
Guys, welcome back. Episode 153 of the Vision Board Podcast. I'm Tristan Cannell. Alongside me, Johnny Stuffgold.
What's up, Tristan Cannell? 153. I'm always in awe by the numbers, bro.
We're getting through a few, man.
Yeah, we've done a little bit.
Yeah,
it's over 153 hours of interview.
Yeah, man.
Gnarly.
It's a lot of work on that side, too. It's a lot of learning, right? A lot of learning.
Who are we talking to?
Drew Manning.
Fit to fat to fit, Drew Manning.
Wait, man. Like, I first heard of Drew through Steve Cook, actually. Steve got a lot of great YouTube videos that he does, and he did one a couple years ago with Drew.
Oh, wow, right.
Because they're both mountain men.
They're both what?
Mountain men.
Oh, like Utah boys,
yeah,
aren't they?
Yeah, Utah.
Yeah.
So I think they're quite good mates. And
okay.
Yeah, so he stopped by Drew's little pad, and those guys were doing something real good. And when I went back into looking at his story, I'm going, wow, this guy actually went fit to fat to fit.
Yeah, and the reason why is the biggest take-home point here, guys, and that's what makes this episode so important, is that from the coaching perspective, understanding the compassionate side of things in regards to client-to-coach relationship.
Yeah, and this is not Supersize Me. Remember that movie Supersize Me where he intentionally went fat?
Yeah.
But he was never in great shape to start with.
That was more political too.
Yeah, that was more of a political. This is actually Drew trying to be in the shoes of his actual clients
and actually
experience it for the first time himself, what it would be to be overweight, having those struggles, what that actually feels like, and then even attempting to get back in the best shape of his life. It's quite a story, and it's quite a tribute to him.
But then also, though, we can't leave this bit out, is everything you just said, but then taking that and then teaching that to the coaches, the new coaches, and that's what he's doing. That's like the next evolution of this, is that he's now has that program and that system to where he's taking coaches, fitness and strength coaches, through that process so they could sit with that and they can learn the compassion. And that's his little way of sprinkling his positive vibes to the industry over and over again.
It's quite a competitive advantage that he's kind of created for himself. The fact that he's actually been in his client's shoes, like that's the type of people that he is going to be coaching and things like that. People that
niche.
Need to lose weight.
Yeah, he's walked through those shoes, right?
And like, I've got to be honest, I've helped so many people in that space, but sometimes, you know, we all get frustrated at clients because they don't do sometimes what you want to do, but the fact of the matter is, like, you try to be as compassionate as possible, but at the end of the day, we just don't know what they feel.
It's a good point, man. I have a client, I have two to come to mind, that over the last year and a half, I've helped them lose over 30 kilos.
Mm.
But to be honest with you, Tristan, you guys listening, I've never had to lose 30 kilos.
Yeah.
So realistically, I could tell them applicable steps and I can motivate and encourage them, but I can't feel it like they feel it. And I think that's where Drew is important, because
especially how to talk to him, Mark.
That's it. And then convey a compassionate message in the early stages of that progress, because that's the most difficult part, is getting those clients who really need, for their own livelihood, for their family's well-being, to get started.
Mm.
And for him to understand that and know the verbiage and know the words to use, it's powerful.
Yeah, and that's why I brought him on the show, because I don't particularly want to put 30 kilos on.
No.
But I want to learn what it's like for someone that has done it. And I think this is the next best thing is to learn from someone that's done it.
Yeah, because you could turn to Drew and be like, hey, Drew, man, I have a client needs to lose X amount of weight. First session coming up. You know, what's the best way to approach this conversation?
Absolutely.
Having it, he's already, or that's,
if,
yeah.
If we get things that the clients say to us, like stopping points, like why, like what are you feeling during this time? Like, for example, they might not want to go to training because it's getting too hard. What helped you want to go back into training? Like, it's just different questions.
Yeah,
like
keywords that. And yeah, key points.
Which is great.
You can only get through experience.
For sure, man. Guys, so without further ado, here is Drew Manning. All right, our special guest is Drew Manning. Drew is a fitness expert and fitness addict. He's the founder of Fit to Fat to Fit, where his story of his quest to go from fit to fat to fit again, all in 1 year, attempting to better understand the weight loss strategies of his clients. We're pleased to welcome Drew Manning. Drew, welcome to the show, man.
Hey, thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be on.
Drew, man, thanks for stopping by the show. You recently posted one of the Facebook memories. It was from May 2011, and it was your first initial post on social media about the fit to fat to fit idea. Could you share with us where the idea came from and what your intent was May 8th, 2011, on what you wanted to achieve with that?
Yeah, so originally came from me being a part-time personal trainer, but I grew up my entire life in shape, and so I never knew any different. I played football and wrestling ever since I was a little kid. And so for me, I never struggled with being overweight, right? And so when I was a trainer, I had a hard time connecting with my clients who were overweight, and I couldn't understand why it was so hard for them just to, you know, stop drinking soda or just go to the gym and do the workouts like I told them. I would get frustrated with them and be like, I don't understand why you don't just do it. It's easy. It's easy for me. Why isn't it easy for you? And then they would tell me, you know, Drew, you don't understand because for you, it is easy, but for me, it's hard and you don't understand why it's so hard. And I kind of took that to heart. And so I thought of ideas of ways I could be a better trainer. And you guys, for whatever reason, the idea of getting fat on purpose, it clicked in my mind and it felt like it was my calling, like something I needed to do. And so that's where the idea started.
Could you talk about how that affected you when you were, you know, putting the weight on mentally?
Yeah, that's a great question. At first, it was fun. I'll admit, you guys, when I first started this, I was like, no gym, I could eat whatever I want to. And so there was this sense of like freedom that I felt initially to be able to eat whatever I wanted to. And I had fun with it for the first month or so. And then very quickly, that started to change. I started huffing and puffing, walking up the stairs, bending over and clipping my toenails. I had to hold my breath, which I've never experienced before. I started snoring about a month or two in. Wow. And then very quickly, that sense of freedom started to go away. And so that's where this journey started to become more of a mental and emotional journey instead of just physical.
Drew, what was the weight disparity of what you started at and you at your heaviest?
Started at 193. I got up to 269 pounds. At my heaviest.
Wow. And when was that? Was there a point? Did you have a breaking point at all in there and go, well, I just can't do this anymore or anything like that?
There were many of those, but I had to because I had people following me. I had social media followers and the media got wind of what I was doing. And so yeah. I was on all these TV shows and I couldn't just up and quit, even though there was moments where I just felt so sick and so lethargic and so uncomfortable in my own skin. Because here's the problem is when you grow up your entire life in shape, your identity is based around what your body looks like. And so when I started to lose my six pack and started to put on man boobs and a big gut, I freaked out. I'll be honest with you guys. I didn't know who I was. And so it was very, very tough for me, you know, to go out in public, for example, or to be in front of my wife at the time naked or, you know, it was something that was so different. It's something that I hadn't been used to, but it was something that I needed to go through.
Yeah. Did you have to get yourself a coach? Like, for example, you coach people now and you try to break them to bring them back to a healthy lifestyle. You being at that point
when you were up, you put on 75 pounds and you were feeling the way you just described. Was there someone special that had to help you come out of that?
You know what? That's a good question. I don't think there's anyone. I did not have a coach. I had a doctor who monitored me, but no one had really done this before. And so there wasn't any like, okay, you're doing this to yourself on purpose.
Yeah.
You know, here's the steps to do it. But it's kind of interesting now that I've done it and now that I have a TV show with other trainers doing it where I'm coaching them, I can kind of walk them through the process because I understand what part of the process they're going through and kind of know how to talk them off the edge, if you will, and motivate them to keep going. But at that time, yeah, there was no one who had really done this before. So most people were like, well, you're doing this to yourself on purpose. So there's not a whole lot I can help you with.
Was there somebody in your life when you were younger that maybe was overweight or struggling with obesity that triggered this in you to have this compassion, not only to want to feel what people who are overweight feel, but also put yourself through it?
Not exactly from when I was younger, but I was training my brother-in-law at the time during this period where I was a trainer, and it was in training him that really sparked this idea, because here he was, you know, part of the family, and I would see him at family events eating the foods that I told him, dude, you can't have those. Like, I'm your trainer, you can't be eating those if you're trying to lose weight. And he just didn't get it at the time. And that's where the idea, the concept was born, was in training my brother-in-law at the time. And I talk about him in my book.
What did you do for work? Because did you have to completely give up being a personal trainer during this time?
That's a good question. I was actually full-time working in the medical field as a neuromonitoring technician, but I was a part-time personal trainer.
Okay.
And I did decide to give up training during my weight gaining process because I didn't want to be in the gym and be tempted and be depressed that I couldn't work out. And here I would be an overweight trainer training people how to get in shape while I'm eating donuts. I didn't want to go through that.
And as you were, you know, putting that weight on, could you share with us maybe some insights that you were learning about the negative health benefit, like the negative health consequences that were happening to your overall well-being as you were gaining the weight?
Yeah. So from a medical perspective, it did get pretty scary. Like I said, I had a doctor who monitored me throughout this process, and you know, my blood pressure got up to 167 over 113. Oh. My testosterone dropped to the low 200s. Wow. All my, you know, glucose and HDL, LDL, all that, my lipids were in the red. So things did get really, really bad as far as a medical perspective goes. But the lessons, most of the lessons were learned on the mental and emotional side, like how much I realized that there's more to me than my body. Like I have so much more to offer than just what my body is, even though I used to think that, you know, my identity was based on me having a six pack and muscles. And then also how much of transformation is mental and emotional. The emotional connection to food, for example, is way more powerful than I ever imagined. And I never would have understood that had I not gone through this process. I used to think, look, just you stop eating junk food. It's not that hard. You just stop it. You don't eat it. And then you eat healthy food and then you work out and then boom, you see results. Why is that so hard for people? I didn't understand that emotional connection to food that people had until I went through this.
How hard was it to actually, after you put the weight back on, how hard was it to take it back off?
It was really hard. I kind of compare it to, you know, my whole life I've been on top of this mountain of, you know, of health, and I'm at the top and my clients are at the bottom and I'm yelling at them from the top to keep coming up this mountain. It's not that hard. You just keep pushing and you stop falling down, until for the first time in my life, I was at the bottom of the mountain looking up, and it was a totally different perspective to climb up it from the bottom this time instead of always just being on the top. And it was a very humbling process. I did get back in shape. I lost the weight in 6 months. So I gained weight for 6 months and I lost weight for 6 months. So it took me a whole year, right, to go from fit to fat to fit. But in no way was it easy. I mean, I hit plateaus and I struggled to do push-ups on my knees and I lost a lot of strength. But so to make a long story short, I did get back, but it was a very humbling process with a lot of lessons learned.
And did you have any do you have any health kind of factors once you got back down? Like anything from aesthetics? Is there anything that you weren't able to fully recover from gaining that weight?
I'll say this. at the end of my 6 months, even though my weight and body fat was similar, my strength wasn't back to where it used to be. I'll give you that. Like, my strength wasn't what it was, like, with bench and squat and deadlift and number of push-ups and number of pull-ups. You're sacrificing, when you're trying to lose weight, 75 pounds in 6 months, you do got to sacrifice a little bit of your lean mass, in my opinion, to get back down, because it's such a short window of time, 75 pounds. But so that was the only thing. I didn't have loose skin. I got a little bit of stretch marks on my love handles, but, you know, at first I freaked out, but I was totally okay with it because, you know, it's just a part of my story.
Yeah. Did you suffer any, like, anything from your energy side standpoint, energy levels?
No, my energy went back up pretty quickly. I would say within the first 60 days or so, 60 to 90 days, I felt really good. Now, the first 2 weeks of going back to fit were hellish for me to go through, to let go of that food and then all of a sudden cold turkey, start eating healthy again. The food tasted horrible. I had the worst headaches. I was grumpy. I was moody. I felt starving all the time. And here I was, a personal trainer, eating healthy food, and yet I wanted to quit so bad. And this was what I realized my clients were telling me when they struggled to follow a meal plan, is your body fights back. It's like getting off of a drug. It really is. You go through these withdrawal symptoms of not having your drug, or in this case, the food. And your body fights back for a while, you know, until it adjusts, and then your body starts to feel more energetic and alive from eating the healthy food. But there's an adjustment period. And for some people, it's, you know, a couple of weeks. For some people, maybe it's a couple of months, you know. It takes a while to detox.
What about testosterone and sex drive? How long did that take to actually come back to normal levels?
You know what? The first 30 days after my journey back to fit, it more than doubled to around 450 in just those first 30 days. And so it came back pretty quickly, although I wasn't in shape yet, because what I did is the first 30 days, all I changed was diet. I didn't exercise yet.
Okay.
So I skipped exercise completely, and just with diet alone, my testosterone more than doubled. But I still had 50-plus pounds to lose. So in my mind, I still wasn't feeling sexy, you know? And so That was a whole nother issue on the mental and emotional side. So, but yeah, it's amazing how your body is resilient, and if you treat it consistently right, it can repair itself.
Having done this experiment, which is, you know, takes a lot of commitment and discipline on both ends, do you have anything else in the works? Are you looking at life differently in terms of, like, oh, I did that, maybe I should do this? No one's ever done that.
I'm always looking for crazy experiments like this. I've done some mini ones since then. Like, I did a 2-month gluten-free fat to fit experiment where I gained weight eating gluten-free foods that people think are healthy for 2 months. I think I gained 20 pounds, but it was a small little experiment. It wasn't as big as this one or extreme. Yeah. Eating gluten-free foods. And then I showed people how to eat gluten-free the healthy way, but I'm always looking for, you know, N=1 experiments where I can put myself in someone else's shoes to better learn. But, you know, I do got to be careful with my health too. That's why I've been nervous to kind of do something as extreme as this. I don't know if I'll do something extreme as fit to bad to fit. And that's why I have the TV show now, where instead of me doing it, I put other trainers through this process so that they can learn empathy and respect and a better understanding for their clients.
Yeah. One of the experiments I wanted to ask you about, I saw on your Instagram a few months ago, was you did like a 7-day fast. I just wanted to get a few insights into that, because that looked quite interesting.
Yeah, so I guess for some people, they think that's really extreme, and it was. I've never gone without food for 7 days, but I'm always looking for ways to upgrade my health, and I've done the research and had some experts on my podcast talking about the benefits of fasting. And I'd heard about it before with people like Tim Ferriss and a couple other people in the industry that have done it, these extended day fasts. And so I read a book called The Complete Guide to Fasting by Dr. Jason Fung and this guy named Jimmy Moore, who does like 21-day fasts, you know? After doing the research, I kind of scheduled it out and posted about it on social media, and wanted to see what the changes were and, you know, what I experienced. And to be honest with you guys, just to preface this, I had already been doing a ketogenic diet previously with intermittent fasting. So my body was already used to going you know, 16 hours without food and then eat in an 8-hour window. But I've never fasted for more than 24 hours in my life. And so I kind of planned it out and I drank water and bone broth and these things called exogenous ketones. And other than that, there was no other food. I didn't do coffee or tea or any solid foods. And basically I lived off of the water and the electrolytes from the bone broth. I added some salt, some sea salt or pink Himalayan salt to the bone broth. And then the ketones that bump up my ketone levels, which helped with appetite suppression a little bit and help keep my mind clear. And after I got past the first 2 days, you guys, my mind was sharper than it's ever been before. And I felt fantastic. I wasn't hungry. I felt energetic. I wasn't working out. I wasn't working out at the time. But I did have to take care of my daughters and make them food and cook them food and smell it and touch it. But I couldn't eat it. And so that was really hard. And then the only other downside that I noticed or negative to it was I did it in the middle of winter time. So I was absolutely freezing. My body temperature, my core temperature could never get warm. And so I remember at nighttime, I would have to put on extra pair of sweats and an extra blanket because I was cold all the time. And so other than that, I felt fantastic.
How about now? Are you practicing any sort of, like, you brought up keto, intermittent fasting? How's your day to day currently?
Yeah, I still do keto with a mix of intermittent fasting, not true intermittent fasting, because I do a bulletproof coffee in the morning, which
like
I love.
Are you doing like a 12-hour gap?
Yeah, it would be 12 hours. And then I have a bulletproof coffee first thing in the morning, and then I don't eat until noon. So it's not a true intermittent fast, but for me, it works. I like it. I feel great because I'll do a CrossFit like at 9:30. And then, like I said, I'll have my first meal around noon. And I feel fantastic with that, the way that is. And I'm not 100% keto all the time because I have two daughters and I travel sometimes and I'm not always in ketosis. But, you know, every few months I'll do like a 30-day strict keto thing, and then I'll cycle. Maybe I'll do 5 days on, 1 day off, and kind of thing. But for the most part, I do eat a high-fat, low-carb type of diet with a modified intermittent fast, if you will.
Yeah. What's your general macros on your version of the keto diet?
You know, I feel great doing 70-25-5. So that's 70% fat, 25% protein, 5% carbs. Just because my brain feels sharper. And that's the reason I do keto. I don't do it to get ripped or to lose weight, although some people can use it for that. For me, it's nutrition for my brain. So only having to eat twice a day gives my digestive system a break. And my brain, I can work so much clearer throughout the day and get so much more done because I'm never hangry or I never have an afternoon crash where I want to take a nap. And I can go do, you know, high intensity workouts like CrossFit and feel great. You know what I'm saying? Like, I feel fine even though I'm not eating a lot of carbs.
Drew, I think we're all kind of looking for like a one size fits all, whether it's nutrition or a training program, whatever that may be. In regards to ketogenic body being in ketosis, what do you feel, or who do you feel this best suits? What type of person?
You know what? I think it can benefit a lot more people than people think, because there's so many applications to this, because the new science behind the ketogenic diet isn't just about weight loss. Like I said, there's so many therapeutic applications now. I mean, we're looking at things like studies being done on, you know, people with epilepsy and seizures and traumatic brain injury and concussions and Alzheimer's and Parkinson's, and even some forms of cancer. They're doing studies with the ketogenic diet and how it can benefit certain forms of cancer. So I feel like it, like I said, it can benefit a lot more people than people out there think. But the hard part is that people need to do the research first before they go start eating bucket loads of butter and bacon. They need to understand what ketosis is, how it works, do their research first, ask their doctor, and see if it fits their lifestyle. So people with, like, you know, type 2 diabetes, it could really benefit them because it lowers their insulin levels. If someone's insulin resistant, this is a type of diet that can be beneficial, or some form of it. But the problem is that there's no one size fits all. There's, like, I have a program that I kind of recommend to people that puts people in the 70-25-5 range of macros. But people need to adjust that based on their lifestyle, based on how sedentary they are. It's not one size fits all. And what I recommend to people is to become their own experimentation and find what is optimal for them. So, you know, maybe keto isn't the thing for you, but you won't know until you try it for more than, you know, 30 days. You can't just do it for a few days and be like, wow, that was hard. Yeah. And I felt horrible because there's going to be a transitionary period no matter who you are.
Drew, what sort of foods are you eating in terms of high fat? Why I ask is I heard Dom D'Agostino on Tim Ferriss a few times, and he was just going through the diet that he had. And I actually tried it for a couple of days. He was eating things like anchovies and cans, oysters and stuff like that. It was horrible. Like, it really put me off it. So in terms of trying to make people stick to it, it's hard. So I just wanted to get your kind of opinion on some of the high fat foods that you're kind of putting into your clients' diets.
Yeah, I know Dom really well, and he's kind of like a boring guy where he could just eat the same thing, like sardines.
Yeah, it's crazy, man.
So for your average person, like for example, in my 60-day keto program that I have like thousands of people doing right now, it's pretty basic, but the food tastes good. So the Bulletproof coffee is an easy way to get a good amount of fat in. So I do a tablespoon of butter, a tablespoon of coconut oil, add some cinnamon, blend it up in a blender and with some coffee, and you're good to go. And then my first meal of the day around noon, is probably, you know, like 3 or 4 eggs with a tablespoon of butter, saute some spinach or broccoli in there. And then I'll add some full fat cheese to it as well. And then I'll cut up, some chicken sausage, organic chicken sausage that you can buy from the store that tastes good. It's seasoned. It's delicious. Or you could do any other kind of sausage. And that's my meal at lunchtime. And then for dinner, I'll do a couple bacon cheeseburgers with guac or avocado on top of my burgers. And then maybe I'll do, if I have a side of vegetables, I'll do like all kinds of cut up vegetables, but I'll saute them in grass-fed butter and season them with sea salt. So that right there is super easy. It's on the go. You can take it with you if you want to, prepare it in advance if you want to. But that way the food tastes good. It's simple. There's no weird ingredients. And yeah, not everybody's going to like anchovies, oysters, and sardines.
Yeah.
Drew, could you talk about your show a little bit? Share with our fans what it's all about and what they could expect if they tune in.
Yeah, so season one aired last January of 2016. January 2016, and the concept in a nutshell is we take trainers from across the country here in the U.S. and we for 4 months they have to let go of exercise and have to eat the food their clients eat. So I'm the producer on the show. I'm the creator, right? It's based off of my journey. And I kind of coach the trainers through this weight gaining process for 4 months. And then the next 4 months, the trainers team up with a client who's overweight. And together as a team, they have to lose weight. So season one had 10 episodes. It is available online, like on iTunes and a few other places on demand. Season two, we just finished filming. And we'll be coming out sometime later on this year. We don't have an air date yet, but it's just an awesome show because it's not Biggest Loser, right? It's not extreme weight loss. You put these trainers through this process of having them gain weight and step into the shoes of their clients so that they can learn empathy, respect, and a better understanding. So it goes through that mental and emotional part of transformation that you don't really see on other shows. Yes, they do lose the weight with their client, and that's always inspirational, but I think a lot of people would love to see their trainer put on some weight and kind of see how hard it is from their perspective, because there's a lot of judgment in the industry towards people who are overweight. People thinking they're lazy or they just lack willpower and it's easy until they see this show.
Was it a difficult transition for you once the cameras started rolling in terms of going from a regular guy to being on national TV?
Was it difficult for me?
Yeah, for you. Were you out of your comfort zone, or was that right where you're, you know, where you shine? What was that process like?
You know, for me, it happened so quickly, and I was not prepared for it because I didn't have media connections. I didn't know that this was all going to happen. I didn't have like this marketing strategy of, hey, I'm going to have a TV show. I'm going to have a book. I didn't know any of that was going to happen, so I just kind of rolled with it, and I was actually surprised with how well I took it. The media attention happened, and I felt like I did pretty good. Even though it was outside of my comfort zone, I felt like I thrived in those situations. And I think that's what's kind of led people to feel like they can relate to me. You know, it just made me more relatable as a trainer, as a person, and I can better relate to people and empathize with people so much better having done this. And so, you know, in a way, I'm grateful that all this media attention happened, because I wouldn't be able to spread the message or this idea that I had without that help.
Yeah, how do you actually, Drew, how do you spread your, because you've got so much going on right now. You know, you had your book, you've got your programs online, you know, you've got your TV show, your podcast. How are you spending time in each different area?
You know, it's really hard. I go through ups and downs of like, okay, everything is about the TV show, got to leave everything else behind. I do my best. You know, I'm a single dad as well. I have two daughters that are 7 and 5. And I try and balance life with them as a dad and also my business. I just do the best I can and not beat myself up. You know, I kind of make things, certain things a priority, you know, by writing them down on a list. For example, the TV show to me is like the number one priority as far as work goes. And then from there, sometimes it's the podcast. And then other times it's speaking engagements or my online programs or things that need to be done. And so I just do my best at moving my priorities around and making time for those things. And other times I don't do so good because my relationships then, you know, kind of fall by the wayside. I can't, you know, go out and hang out with friends like I want to, or just, hey, I just want to chill and watch a movie tonight, but I got to get all this stuff done. So I don't feel like I'm a perfect example, but I do the best I can.
Sure. Let's unwrap the origin of the fit to fat to fit in regards to the societal issue of obesity and people being overweight. So if we unwrap that and you listed in a few couple steps, because it's a really loaded question, what would you list as some of the main factors as a society why so many people are overweight?
That's a great question, man. It's sometimes it seems so simple to look at it and be like, oh, well, here's the problem. Like, if, for example, it's the food industry, the processed food, it's killing us all, which I do think is a serious issue. Don't get me wrong. I do know that food companies purposely make foods, you know, highly palatable for people to get addicted to those foods. So there's that concept. But then our society in general has gone from, you know, manufacturing, industrial to technology, and we're sitting in front of a desk all day. And so for me, I feel like food has become, and this lifestyle, the sedentary lifestyle has become, there's some kind of strong emotional connection to it, to where it's not easy to change once people have grown up in it, right? Mm-hmm. So like if our parents raised us a certain way, it's hard to break those old habits, or we don't realize that we have an unhealthy relationship with food. If we have like a strong emotional connection to food, we're covering up other underlying issues. So that's what I'm saying is it's not as easy as saying, oh, everybody's just addicted to food because of the food industry. Each person, each individual has a different journey and different challenge in front of themselves. And it's like saying not everybody that drinks alcohol is going to become an alcoholic, right? Not everybody that eats sugar is going to become addicted to sugar and become obese and never going to be able to stop, right? We're each individual. So it's hard to put people in a box and say, this is the issue. I think it's a multitude of things. And that's why it's not so easy to change. It's not like, hey, let's just get people to move more and eat less calories. We all know that's not going to work, right? So for me, I see it as individualized, like a solution for all of this is customized, individualized nutrition, customized, individualized fitness, because not everybody wants to go to the gym and do bench press and squats, right? Or not everybody thrives on a keto diet, or not everybody thrives on a vegan diet. So I see the future of it as individualized healthcare where, you know, based on certain testing and technology, we can find out what type of diet is right for each individual person instead of just saying, you know, hey, here, eat this. And if you don't lose weight, what's wrong with you? It's your problem.
Drew, having gone through it yourself, in terms of step one for someone that's overweight, before what you used to do before with the client, having not known what they used to go through, what was the change in your interpretation in terms of taking the next step for the client to, you know, break that mold? How much did that change in terms of before when you weren't fat to having undergone it to having to actually bring it back and teach people then?
That's a great question. It's night and day, man, to be honest with you. I used to focus so much more on the physical side. So meal plans, exercises, changing up the diet, changing up the calories, changing up the macros, changing up the workouts, the intensity, because that's all I could relate to them on. And that's all I knew how to teach. Whereas now I focus so much more on the mental and emotional challenges of that person, and trying to help them overcome it. Like, why do they have such a strong emotional connection to food? Like, let's actually break it down and find out, you know, is there someone that didn't love you, or is there some kind of abuse? Is there some kind of addiction that we need to overcome? I know it's not I'm not a therapist, and I'm not saying it's as easy as going through the steps, but I feel like each person, if they put as much attention into overcoming their mental and emotional challenges as they do to a new P90X program or a new diet that comes out, then I feel like it would be more of a lifestyle for them instead of just another fad diet that they try for 30 days and it got too hard, and so they fall off the wagon, right? So how I've changed as a trainer is all my programs, yes, they do have the physical, right? They do have meal plans and exercises, but I try and create a support system for people and give them accountability through these support systems, whether it's a private Facebook group where they can check in once a week. And they're not afraid to talk about their struggles or their failures or their successes or their progress photos. And build a strong community of people that are doing that together at the same time is very powerful and helps people overcome their mental and emotional challenges, in my opinion, way better than just saying, okay, here's your meal plan, here's your workout, good luck.
What's up, guys? Be sure to pick up your free copy of Conversations with Champions. This is our free ebook, which is comprised of inspirational quotes from past guests that we've had on the show.
Get inspirational quotes from champions such as Evander Holyfield, Jonathan Thurston, Grant Cardone, Gary Vee, Larry Holmes, Mario Andretti, Anthony Mundine, Joe DeFranco, and many, many more.
To pick up your free copy now, just simply go to our website, www.divisionboardpodcast.com/ebook. Put your name and email in the slot. It takes about 10 seconds, and we'll send you the book directly to your inbox. Now back to the show.
Yeah, Drew, I'm sure when you first started telling your circle of influence about this idea, you know, more than 5-6 years ago, you were probably getting a lot of, I don't know, criticism or people saying, Drew, you know, that's not a good idea. And if you would have listened to those critics, never went for it, we wouldn't be having this conversation. So could you share with our fans and listeners maybe some important key points on taking that leap? And if you want to pursue something, go after it.
Yeah. Kind of like, you know, coming back to what you said in the beginning, how you saw that post of me sharing 6 years ago on this date, here was my Facebook post of I'm starting this journey. Here's my website, you know, And here we are today. Right. So you never know where your journey is going to take you. And who knows, this could have been a huge failure and a huge dud, but you learn from each experience, whether it's positive or negative. And I know that for a fact. Like for me, going through a divorce, even though at the time it seemed like, you know, the world was going to end, right? Mm. Here I am, never been better. And so I look back at my past, you know, from Fit to Bad to Fit to life decisions, and I'm thankful and grateful for each decision, whether bad or good, because you're going to learn from it regardless. Mm. So if you feel like you're called to do something in life, don't be scared to do it. No, and don't worry about what other people are going to think of you. That's the biggest problem is that, and I grew up with this, is fearing what other people are going to think of you if you fail and being so paralyzed by that fear that you never live. You're not really living if you go through your whole life caring about what other people think of you. And it's taken me 36 years to break through that, but I'm finally breaking through that I feel like I'm just starting to learn like how powerful and how much more enjoyable life is when you do let that go. That's the advice I would give myself 10, 20 years ago and other people out there who are even older. It's never too late to learn that lesson.
Yeah. Drew, you've got two young daughters. Have they asked you about what actually happened in this whole process?
They do. They are exposed to, you know, my pictures, and they see my book or they see me on certain TV shows, and they're like, Daddy, you were fat. And so we all just like, you know, it's kind of funny because they don't remember it. My oldest was only 2 at the time.
Yeah.
But they understand it now, like what I did and why I did it. And they know what I do now. And so they, you know, they're still young to kind of fully understand it though.
Yeah, talk about the book for a little bit. Is this something that is just documenting the journey, or are there things in this book that, you know, we haven't touched base on yet?
Yeah, so no, the book goes into more of the personal journey that I went on during Fit to Fit. So the first half of it is the narrative story on a very, very personal level. Like, there's a chapter in there even from my ex-wife who just is – from her perspective, what she went through. And then I go through, like, you know, a very personal story of how this affected me. Like I said, my sex life and, you know, I wouldn't say I was depressed, but how it kind of – I freaked out because I lost my identity. And then also the lessons I learned. And then the second half of the book is the specific meal plans and the workouts that I use to get back in shape, because – people always want to know, okay, well, then how did you lose the weight? Like, you know, did you eat 1,000 calories a day? What was your diet? What were your workouts like? You know, they want to know that part of it.
Drew, I asked you before about, you know, how you separate your day. Also, you know, read back a while ago that you started doing 20-minute workouts. I just wanted to see if you're still doing that and how that kind of has fitted in, you know, lifestyle.
Yeah, I still do. And I work out way less frequently now than I used to back in the day. So CrossFit, you know, the workout could sometimes be 3 minutes, 2 minutes, or as much like today was a 20-minute workout. And I go maybe 3-4 days a week if I'm lucky to fit those in. It's about working out smarter, not longer. And that's kind of my mentality. That's what I preach to people. You don't need to go to the gym and do 60-minute workouts all the time. Like, I'm okay with that every once in a while because for some people it's therapy. But if you're looking the most bang for your buck, high-intensity interval training, you know, CrossFit-style workouts where your heart rate is to its, you know, near maximum level for a short period of time, and then there's a recovery period, and then you repeat that, that will give you the most bang for your buck when it comes to fat loss and your physique, if that's what you're going for. But I understand the gym is therapy for some people, and so it's okay if you go and spend an hour or two in the gym. But you don't need to, is what I'm saying. If you're looking, you know, for real results, like I said, you can get away with 10-minute workouts, 20-minute workouts a few days a week.
Is it fair to say that, like, having gone through this experience, helping coaches develop in a specific way, teaching them things like empathy for their clients, do you feel that having gone through that, that has developed you as a coach to a certain level that if you've never gone through it, you wouldn't have been able to reach?
I know for me personally, I never would have fully understood why people struggle with transformation had I not gone through this. And now I know with the other trainers on the show, with them going through this, it's a totally different experience for them. And until you go through it, you can kind of say you understand and empathize with people. But I do feel like this journey, this experience could benefit a lot of trainers out there, especially the ones who have never been overweight. And so I'm not saying every trainer needs to do it by any means. I do feel like it can benefit a lot of people. And at the end of the day, I just think this world needs more empathy. And this is one of the ways that I think trainers in the fitness industry can gain more empathy for their clients. There are other ways, I'm sure, but this is the way that worked for me. And I know it worked for other trainers now, having put them through this process.
And what were those auditions like? Did you bring in like psychologists to filter these PT, these personal trainers? Like, what was the surveying process like? All right, this guy's good, this girl's not, like that sort of thing.
Yeah, the selection.
Yeah, so that's a good question. I wasn't in charge of that, to be honest with you. The way it works is the network hires the casting company. They put together all the submissions. And then A&E does have psychologists and, you know, reality TV experts that kind of can say, okay, this person is good for reality TV. This person's going to freak out and maybe we'll kill everyone. So let's not have them on the show. So there are psychologists involved in this process. The TV industry is so weird. I've learned so much during this process, but it wasn't me sitting in there in an audition room of people eating Twinkies and us saying, okay, that person's good to go. You know what I'm saying? Like, it wasn't like that.
But it was a bumpy road, right? Because your first pitch for the TV show didn't go through, correct? And then you got called a few months later. Is that right?
Yeah. Not a lot of people know that. But yes, we originally pitched it when I was still fat, actually. And so it was funny going to these networks and pitching the show, but no one picked it up. And I just thought it was dead in the water. So I was kind of bummed for a good, you know, couple of years. Like, man, that was such a good idea. And then a couple of years ago, they reached out to me and said, hey, we want to repitch this. Can we repitch this? And I said, yeah, of course. And so they did. And then 2 weeks later, A&E bought the show. And just like that, here we are on season 2. Hopefully, you know, once season 2 airs, we'll have a season 3.
Drew, we've had a few experts in blood work last couple of episodes. We have a gentleman by the name of Tom Bellella, who's Joe DeFranco's nutritionist. So we'll just, I'm not sure if you saw what Joe did with his rebuild Joe D, but he just got in the most amazing shape of his life at age 41. So he went through the whole, you know, blood work things, and he learned different things. Like he learned that he was intolerant to things like chicken, eggs, apples, and just, you know, real staples that, you know, for myself, Johnny and yourself probably eat every day. So I know that you've gone through that blood work stage. So can you share with us maybe some of the findings out of that that you weren't expecting?
That's a good question. So I kind of started doing my own blood testing at home, but it's your basic lipid profiles, your basic hormone panel type of tests. So, for example, no food allergies or anything like that that I've tested for. I'm trying to think what else that I've tested for that's in my blood that has been surprising to me off the top of my head. Nothing comes up. I can't think of anything exciting like that. So I apologize.
No, that's all right. I'll just even share a personal experience. This week I've actually taken out eggs, and I've had the most energy because I've had eggs. I'm 34 years old. I've had eggs since my mum let me eat them.
Every day?
Yeah. Gnarly. This is the first week that I've never had eggs, and I have amazing energy this week. It was interesting that, I don't know, I want to get my blood work done now.
You eat eggs every day?
Every day.
Jesus.
I almost do too. Damn. Almost every day. But I feel like, you know, if the tests are reliable and they tell you, you know, they can tell you for sure, like, hey, you have some type of allergy to eggs, or maybe it's something in the eggs, the egg whites or the type of eggs. But I think the most powerful experience or experiment people can do is their own N equals one. Like, hey, I'm going to go without eggs for a week and see how I feel. I've been eating them for 34 years straight every day.
Yeah.
But become your own self-experimentation. And that's why I think it's so valuable, because no one else can tell you, hey, you shouldn't eat eggs or you shouldn't eat this or that, because your body's different than mine. And so I think that's really powerful, getting your blood work done and knowing what is optimal for you.
Drew, I grew up in the United States and I've been in Sydney for roughly 4 years. And the Australian populace, they're big travelers. They love going to America. And what I've learned is, you know, me going back once a year, it's a thing to say, I'm going to America, I'm going to put on 7-8 kilos in the 2-3 weeks that I'm there. Every time I go personally, Tristan and I went last June, and 7 kilos in 2.5 weeks. And it's almost like I did some research, and there are certain chemicals in the foods in America that are illegal in most like other countries, such as high fructose corn syrup, et cetera, et cetera. What's your opinion on that? Like, do you preach that? Do you tell your clients to avoid things like that? Do you get that specific with ingredients?
I try to, but not everybody here in America listens, because the problem is that the unhealthy stuff is so cheap and so affordable. It's like, I get it. Like, you know, it's not that healthy for me, but it's so good and it's so cheap. Like, why not? And so I know that I think what you're saying about people coming over here and gaining weight is true, because I know people from other countries that the same thing happens. So I do feel like if you can afford it, or if you want to invest in your health, start buying higher quality meats, you know, higher quality dairy and higher quality ingredients in the foods that when you come over here to America. So, you know, like grass-fed meat, beef, free-range eggs, you know, pastured eggs, you know, the, you know, milk from grass-fed cows versus just the cheap, easy stuff that you can buy in a carton at the grocery store. So it is that whole thing of like, okay, the healthy food is so expensive, the unhealthy food or the cheaper stuff is an easier option for people. But yeah, man, I know people come over here and they gain weight, and that's kind of like part of the culture. So
another crazy thing is you just brought up milk. I was unaware of this until I moved out of the country, that in America, you know, they want 1% milk, 2% milk. And milk was brought into the culture as like whole fat. That was the reason. And like in Australia, it's whole fat. And the, you know, the initial reason was to get that macronutrient. And somewhere along the lines, they took the fat out of the milk, and people were drinking it every morning with sugar in their cereals, basically just lactate. Is this something that causes, it comes up in conversation at all?
Oh, totally. And this is kind of how we can kind of connect the dots of, okay, when did obesity start, you know, increasing or spiking here in the U.S.? It was, you know, in the 70s and 80s, and that was around the time that we were told fat is the enemy. And now there's even articles in NPR and Huffington Post of companies paying doctors to villainize fat, right? Yeah. So that the sugar industry could boom and benefit from it. So people would start buying low-fat milk and low-fat foods because we thought fat was the enemy based on the quote-unquote science back in those days. And throughout the 70s, 80s, and early 90s, millions of people were dying of cardiovascular disease and heart disease, that obesity-related diseases. And yeah, it's kind of scary how that all happened. And now we're just starting to come around like, hey, fat's not that bad for us, but maybe we should stay away from these processed sugars and refined carbohydrates and all these processed foods that are out there that are causing all these diseases. But it's an uphill battle because there's still these kind of purists thinking that, hey, you know, fat is still bad and cholesterol is bad. But I think we're starting to realize through people like you guys and podcasts, it's getting out there in the mainstream media that these things aren't as bad as we were taught and we were kind of lied to in a way.
Yeah, you mentioned podcasts. You know, with everything you do with your book and your TV, the thing that goes probably under the radar a little bit is you have a really good podcast. What I was going to ask you was maybe speak about maybe a guest that maybe blew you away and just taught you something just out of left field.
Oh man, I've had so many guests from like Chris and Heidi Powell to Sean T to Tony Horton,
yeah.
A couple UFC fighters. But honestly, this is the one that comes to mind was just on this past week, and she was a life coach, and she kind of put this thing out there, and my audience loved it, so did I. Like, it really got to me. She was talking about, you know, the inner self critic of how hard we are on ourselves as humans. We beat ourselves up, especially as adults. We're just so hard on ourselves to the point where, you know, we think we're worthless, and we, you know, a lot of people are depressed because of that. And she kind of gave this idea this option for people when they do start yelling at themselves or they're mad at themselves because they cheated on their diet or they weren't successful in their job or whatever it is. The next time you yell at yourself, you have a picture of yourself as a little boy or a little girl. And would you talk to that little boy or little girl the way you're talking to yourself now as an adult? And that was really powerful for me, and it really got to me. And so many of my followers that listened to it were like blown away by that. I'm like, you know what? That's a really good idea. And so that was the first one that came to mind. There's been a ton of great people on the podcast, but that was the first one that came to mind.
All right, Drew, we've come to the personality round of the interview. Johnny's got the first question.
Drew, man, for our listeners at home, could you give them some advice when they're having bad days on overcoming that adversity?
Well, you know what's helped me is letting the day, like if it's bad, let it hurt, let it suck. You know, don't try and change it right away, but just feel what that feels like. You know what, like this is a bad day, you know, and just kind of accept that at first, but then I like to use meditation as a process to work through these bad days and realize, okay, why is it a bad day? Was it such a bad day? Are these all first world problems that I'm complaining about? Mm. Like traffic was bad and, you know, I forgot my credit card in the car or my car ran out of gas or whatever it is. Are these first world problems or are these real issues that I'm suffering and my life is, I'm wasting my life away? So meditation is a great tool to help people through that.
All right, Drew, I'm going to take you back to your childhood. What posters did you have on your childhood bedroom wall growing up?
That's a good question. It was a combination of the Lakers with Magic Johnson and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and that whole crew.
Yeah, good.
And it was the San Francisco 49ers with Joe Montana, Tom Rathman, Ronnie Lott, those guys. Yep. Those were my teams.
Roger Craig, those are some great teams. Yeah, their owner's actually from my hometown, Eddie DeBartlow. But yeah, Youngstown, Ohio plug. Moving on. Drew Manning, if three of your closest friends were sitting at a table and you weren't in the room, what sort of things would they be saying about you?
Oh, that's a good one, man. That's a hard question. I think they would say that I'm a nice guy. Like, Drew's a really good guy. I would think they would say, you know, Drew's a really good dad. And then they would probably say, Drew, I don't know. I kind of don't want to say it, but Drew probably thinks he's a hot shot because he's in shape. That's what I would think they would say.
All right, Drew, final question. You're going to be hosting a private dinner party. You've got 5 invites. Now, the only rules, no family or friends, but it can be anyone, dead or alive. Who are you inviting?
I'm going to have Dwayne The Rock Johnson, right, for sure, and ask him about becoming president over here in the U.S.
It could happen.
Let's see. I can't remember her name, but she's the new Wonder Woman. I kind of got a crush on her. Do you guys know her name?
Is she the one from Friday Night Lights?
I have no idea.
She's the new Wonder Woman superhero girl. She was in Batman vs. Superman, and she's Wonder Woman. I can't remember her name. Anyway, she's beautiful. I would love to have her on here for the dinner. I would say another one that's kind of out there is Tim Ferriss. I think he would be great to have as well. And then Joe Rogan to keep us all entertained. I don't know if you guys know Joe Rogan over there, but yeah, he's hilarious.
Sure.
I can see what you're doing. I can see what's on your playlist, on your podcast playlist right now.
Yeah, and then I gotta have one other girl at least, man.
Just in case and, Wonder Woman rejects you.
Yeah, just in case. And I'm gonna go with what's her name? I'm doing horrible at remembering people's names. Michelle Pfeiffer. I've had a crush on her since back in the day. So Michelle Pfeiffer.
Excellent. All right, everyone at home, get following Drew. He's at www.fittofattofit.com on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. He's on the same channel, Fit to Fat to Fit, as well. Drew, my man, thanks for sharing the open insights. It's something that, you know, me and Johnny, we probably haven't tackled ourselves before. So to get really insightful, you know, intriguing information from you today was fantastic, man.
Yeah, man. Thanks for stopping by the show. We really appreciate you sharing the space with us and you know, keep pushing things forward, man.
Yeah, I appreciate you guys. I had a great time, to be honest with you. Thank you.
Johnny, that was fantastic. That was Drew Manning, man.
Yeah, very important message there. And what a, you know, what a mindset of a guy to actually walk the walk, talk the talk, and share that message.
Oh, that is definitely walking the walk. And I admire him for doing that, man. And he's creating a great business out of it, too. And he's getting the props that he deserves fully.
It reminds me of one of my favorite shows when I was a kid was Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. And there was,
I love that show.
Do you remember the episode?
What time they used to put that in America?
8:30 p.m.
Was it?
Yeah, it was at 8:30 on Mondays.
Ours was straight off to school. Was it 4 o'clock?
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was Monday at 8:30 p.m. And then at 8 p.m. was Blossom.
Mm.
So, but on that show, and then Family
Blossom
Matters.
Blossom's beautiful.
Yeah, really? I was more of, I liked her
what
neighbor.
Was her friend?
6?
Yeah.
I think so. I don't know why I remember that. But one of the Fresh Prince episodes, Will, because Will was making fun of Uncle Phil for being overweight. And then Uncle Phil had a coach, and she made Will wear a fat suit everywhere. And then he was in the market, the grocery store, wearing this really obese fat suit. And it was, you know, at the time I was a kid. And now I look back on it, I mean, for the message, it's a powerful message. And that was in the early 90s.
Yeah.
About being compassionate for people who are struggling with things that on the surface you might make fun of them
for.
Yeah,
you don't know what they're going
through. You don't know what they're going through at all.
Uncle Phil, man, he passed away a couple years ago.
Yeah,
it was great. Cry a little bit because you get so attached. I used to see him on TV every day. It was like,
yeah,
you know, when you know, yeah, he was just in your life.
What a great
day.
Show, man. There was a scene there's a scene that for some reason has gone viral recently, and it's early on in the series with Will, and he's having a heart-to-heart with Uncle Phil, but he was trying to be cool, and it was about Will's real dad.
Oh,
and
I've seen that episode.
And then he's just, I got goosebumps.
Because he wants to be loved.
Yeah, and he's just breaking down and he's crying. And man, I cried when I watched the scene as an adult when I saw the viral clip and rewatched it.
Their chemistry, those two.
Yeah.
I can't remember. Was it James Earl? Was that Uncle Phil's name?
No, he wasn't James Earl Jones.
No, what was his name?
I won't know his name. I only know him from...
Their chemistry was unbelievable.
Yeah, I only know him from the show.
But even like Carlton, to think that he's famous for being Carlton, he could not do anything else.
Alfonso Ribeiro.
His dancing was unbelievable.
For sure. But he's done a lot of things like in Hollywood, like your little insider and stuff. But even was it Gregory, the butler?
Uncle Phil's name is James Avery.
Jeez, you were close. I thought you were...
Yeah. What did I say?
You said James Earl. Yeah, you were close.
Who's James Earl?
James Earl Jones is the voice of Mufasa.
Yes.
He was on The Sandlot.
Yes.
And he's been in tons and tons of movies.
I love that guy.
Yeah.
Great episode, guys. If you haven't yet, please share it. It's the best way for us to continue to grow, or please leave us a 5-star review on iTunes.
Yeah, guys, right now, we'd love for you to share this message. Share Drew's message. Copy and paste that. Twitter it. Tweet it. SoundCloud, Insta, Facey. Support us.
For sure. Guys, we will check you next week. We've got some big shows. We've got Jill Miller and Jonathan Fields. It's going to be some great learning experience next week.
For sure. Wellness. Bring it, bring it, bring it.
All right, guys. We will check you next week.
Peace.
Welcome to the Vision Board Podcast. Stories of success from around the world.
You guys are scratching an itch, and that's why this podcast has become popular and successful, is because you guys are scratching an itch. You're enjoying it, and you're also benefiting from the knowledge that people are dropping.
I've never met the person in my life, including my parents, that was able to outwill me about me.
Whatever profession you're in, you need to keep working harder. You know, nothing comes easy these days, and you know, you'll get knocked down, but get back up, that counts, so just keep working hard at it.
You know, you guys said you do stuff, you ask things that aren't Googleable. You guys are 2 for 2.
There's never been a time in my life where anybody ever was able to tell me who I was more than I knew who I was.
To join our vision and follow the journey, please subscribe to the Vision Board Podcast via iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher.